baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Doten with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network. The only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I discuss the Chiefs' closer than comfortable win against the Texans and preview the Christmas Eve game against the Seahawks. Joe, the Chiefs have won the last two games, and as we saw during a crazy weekend of football, that's not easy to do, but they narrowly beat two bad teams, the Broncos and Texans, and allowed 27 and 24 points respectively to two woeful offenses. Joe, what's your level of concern, or is a win, especially given all the crazy endings from last weekend?
Well, I mean, look, I don't want to be too overly positive with the whole win is a win, but it is true. You win by 1 point, you win by 100 points, the W goes into the column the same. So, you know, I do give the Chiefs a lot of credit for being where they are right now. The thing that I'm concerned about is they haven't really played like a complete game. I don't want to say, because I've been saying perfect game, and that's the wrong term.
Right.
You should never use it. No one's ever going to play a perfect game. They haven't played the complete game yet, where they've hit on every aspect of the three teams, special teams, offense and defense, and done things to say, you know, get as close to perfect as possible. Limit the penalties. Limit the turnovers, you know, to zero. You don't want any turnovers, you know. So you want to limit penalties. You want to eliminate turnovers, and you want to be able to hold a team to, you know, a lot of punts and a lot of three and outs and a lot of change of possessions. Right. That's how you win ball games consistently. And they just haven't played that complete game that I'm looking for out of them. I think they have these flashes of brilliance, offense. On defense, you know, the big turnover in overtime, right? They got the stop when they needed it. But there's just something about, you know, their ability to stop teams in the red zone, which I think is a concern, right? I believe they're ranked very low to the bottom. The last statistic I saw, they're ranked very low in the NFL on defense with allowing teams to score touchdowns inside the red zone. I think once teams get in the red zone, I think the Chiefs are somewhere between 60 to 70% of the time teams are scoring touchdowns inside the red zone. And that has to stop. You know, you're not going to beat these teams, as you know, as Marty used to say, the fit gets tight at the top of that pyramid as you go through the playoff march. And they're just not going to be able to do that, Jeff. And you know, offensively, I think it's got to be the turn, you know, so defense, if I had to pick one thing, just one thing on defense, it would be stopping teams in the red zone from scoring touchdowns and making them kick field goals. And on offense, it would be no fumbles, right? I think Patrick's going to get a ball tipped. They're going to throw some interceptions here and there, but I think fumbles are controllable at least 80 to 85% of the time. You can control fumbling the ball, taking care of it, 4 points of pressure when you're running with it, you know, not putting it in the right hand when you're going down the sideline, doing all those fundamental things that you do to protect the ball. Because, you know, we were talking on 810 this morning and about, you know, Bill Moss, you know, was bringing up how Marty used to, when we used to play the Seahawks, right, who were actually coming to play, which is very appropriate. You know, Marty used to call it like fumble week or Seahawks week. And every time he'd have running backs walking around with footballs in their hand, guys would be swatting at footballs in the locker room and the meeting rooms. Like you had to take, just to put players in that mindset that the Seahawks were a turnover crazy team and they knew how to get the ball out of running back's hand. So maybe Andy needs to pull out an old Marty Schottenheimer piece of the playbook and do a Seahawks week's, you know, yeah. have the running backs and receivers just walking around with footballs all week and during every day, like walking around in the locker room everywhere. And everybody tries to bat the ball out and, you know, just make them think about it. But those are my two things, one on offense, one on defense.
Great anecdote there about Seahawks week. You talked about the two facets of the game, Joe. I'm curious your take on the third area of the game, special teams. Dustin Colquitt, you know, went online and talked about how some of Harrison Butker's issues were a result of actually the holds from Tommy Townsend, what he was doing incorrectly about the laces. Joe, I know you really know special teams. You're a long snapper. Have you been seeing any of that? Or I'm just curious your take on this.
Well, I mean, look, I know the injury, you know, Butker's old injury from the beginning of the season can't be helping him, right? I mean, I don't know if a player's confidence level can go that fast to or downplay that fast, right? Where he's struggling to make, you know, a 51 yarder, which, you know, for him, man, I gotta say that was money, you know, a year ago, like 51, yeah. 51, dude, come on, that's nothing. And, you know, so it's gotta be some of the injury playing into it, but yeah, I mean, if there's a small tweak right there that Tommy Townsend's doing or should be doing or not doing as far as the laces go, that's a fine motor skill, man. You know, being able to kick a football that's, you know, shaped like an oval. It's got a tiny little tip sitting on the ground. You got no tee anymore, right? Like, remember back in the day, you used to have the kicking tee for the extra points and field goals. You don't have that anymore. You're kicking off the ground. And, you know, there's a lot of fine points that have to be executed on to make a field goal. And meanwhile, you got, you know, 11 guys rushing at you. So, you know, yeah, it could mean something. It could mean something to Harrison's little bit of a slump here, that maybe there's something off between the hold. I mean, obviously Winchester's been snapping a long time. I think from what I've seen on the videos, he's getting the laces to where he needs them to be for the holder to put it down, so Harrison's not kicking the laces. Mm-hmm. It's something in Townsend's motor skill there. As he's putting the ball down, he's moving the laces to maybe a point where Harrison doesn't really like them. So, you know, it could be a factor. And, you know, it seems like they've got the returner thing down now. It seems like we've got our sea legs there. We haven't seen any, knock on wood, haven't seen any problems in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think special teams, it looks like it's that part right now that we can't really count on the 3 points maybe the way that we could, you know, inside the, you know, the, from the 40-yard line in.
My concern, you talked about, I think, the good points of the turnovers and stuff. My concern is actually, and again, I think the Chiefs are maybe the most complete team in the NFL, still have a great chance at home field advantage, great chance of winning the Super Bowl. I'm worried about the secondary. I feel that the safeties don't make a lot of play. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're not kind of, we got so spoiled by Tyrann Mathieu being such a ball hawk, a game changer. I don't think Justin Reed, Thornhill, and Cook are like that. Just the amount of fumbles and interceptions are generating. You know, I don't remember really kind of any of those type of big plays. And then we knew that the cornerbacks are so young back there. So that's Joe, that's kind of what I'm looking at going forward. Is that going to be their weakness? But again, I don't mean to be 7 straight division titles. I don't want to be like gloom and doom here. But that's what I kept thinking about the last few games here.
Well, Jeff, every team, you know, yeah, nobody's seven perfect. Straight titles. So nobody's right. Yeah, nobody's perfect. We kind of opened the show with that, right? Nobody's perfect. Nobody's, you know, no one's going to have a perfect roster, right? Because in these days of the complex salary cap, you know, you're going to have holes here and there that you have to fill constantly. And, you know, I think focusing on the defense, it's got to be, right? Even the strongest of teams, the dynasties of the Patriots and the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era, and the Cowboys and Troy Aikman. And, you know, you go back to the Bills, 4 straight Super Bowls. I know they didn't win one, but, you know, they still went to 4 straight Super Bowls and dominated the AFC. In the 90s, like, every team's going to have a weakness, right? Even those teams had something. No team is going to be perfect. And I think this definitely is the team's Achilles heel. You know, I think it's the one part that keeps me up at night.
That you're in agreement there. Cause I know additionally our concern, I think, was about like the running game. We're feeling pretty good about that now, I think. So you're with me kind of, if there is a concern and nobody's perfect, but that the secondary for you is the
issue. Definitely, definitely. And I think even the linebackers are doing a decent job of getting into coverage. I think, you know, the middle part of the field, the underneath seems to be pretty secure. Those guys can make tackles in mm-hmm. the open field. To me, it's the youth of the cornerbacks, right? This is Captain Obvious statement, and just kind of repeating what you said. It's the youth of the corners, and just like their lack of experience, and it's that coupled with not having, I think, the leadership that they had in the past in the secondary with at the safety position. Yeah. I think I'm going to use that term, leadership. They're just it's you can have all the talent in the world playing those positions, but if you don't have somebody out there as a field general, kind of being that leader, picking players up, because, you know, playing corner, man, you're on an island. There's a hot white spotlight on you when you are playing corner, and you have to have some leaders behind you to get you going, pick you up, let you know that, look, you're not going to make every play. You're going to get beat, but you have to be, what's Ted Lasso say? You got to be like a goldfish, right? It's got to forget real quick about the stuff that happens and just keep playing. And I think that's what this team is missing in the secondary. They're playing with a lot of confidence up front. You know, the front seven, I mean, at this point, the way they're playing together, I mean, you'd almost put this front seven and then with Karlaftis, you know, and Dunlap rotating in. I mean, you'd almost have to put them up against anybody. I would. I mean, at this point, you know, this late in the season, having seen enough football and enough other teams play, I'd put that front seven or eight up really against anybody. It's really in the defensive secondary that it causes me pause.
Joe, great analysis there. And it's funny too, because how you look at how kind of teams change and stuff, you know, I think even during the Chiefs back-to-back Super Bowls, my biggest concern was the linebacking core. I thought they had trouble against the run. I thought they had trouble with like screen passes, that the linebackers weren't fast enough. Like you said, with Bolton and Gay, so really upgraded the unit. And then that front four, Chris Jones is as good as you get. I mean, I think he's even had a better year than Aaron Donald, who is a transcendent. He's a generational talent, but he's been hurt a couple games. I think Chris Jones might be you could argue, the best defensive tackle in football. So that front seven, you're right, is really good. And I think we'll look back. Right now, the secondary is really young. They're showing a lot of promise. A few years from now, you know, Chris Jones might be older and stuff. We might be looking at the strength of that defense, might actually be the secondary once these guys have a few years under the belt. So it's just interesting how things change, that so worried about the linebackers. Now that's, I feel, a position of strength. And now it's kind of the secondary that is going through a little bit of growing pains. So,
yeah, definitely.
Well, during the holidays, Joe, we think of family and loved ones. And before we go to our ad, I just wanted to mention Grant Wall, the acclaimed soccer writer who's from Kansas City and went to Shawnee Mission East, passed away earlier this month at the World Cup. And before covering soccer, he wrote about college basketball for Sports Illustrated. When I was just starting out as a journalist, I was a huge fan of his. So I was working at a gym right after college, and a client of mine knew his family and put me in touch with him. So I sent him some clips, and even though he didn't really know me, he always read them, often on planes when going from one sports destination to another. He was giving me pointers through many of my articles. He was really an early mentor to me. So I just wanted to mention what a generous and, of course, an incredibly gifted writer he was. So just thinking of his family during this time.
Yeah, what a sad turn of events there, right? In the hype and celebration of the World Cup and all the fun and, you know, festivities and things that come around. It's a really, really sad one. And you know, really thinking of his family, Jeff. You're absolutely right. That's a tough one. That was a tough one to stomach.
Well, Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Bet Online continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join to make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Joe, perfect segue here. BetOnline has the Chiefs favored by 10 over the Seahawks. That team used to play twice a year, but now is a more infrequent opponent. How do you see this matchup shaking up, shaping?
Well, yeah, Jeff, I mean, oh boy, you know, I haven't, you know, my BetOnline, you know, account is dipping because, you know, I keep going with these big wins for the Chiefs based on, you know, what you would think, right, historically against some of these teams, right, that the Chiefs have been playing. And, yeah, I mean, the Seahawks are, you know, they're right now 50-50 team, right? They're 500 team. They're, you know, they're playing decent football. They're, you know, they're 500, certainly better than, you know, some of the other teams the Chiefs have played, like the Texans, you know, 1-11-1 or whatever they were when they played them. And, you know, that's a really tough, it's a tough one to say. Are they going to beat them by 10? Are they just going to, are they going to play that complete game? And I think they're ready for it. And if they don't, then you know, maybe we should start getting worried, because you know, this is it. This is the time where, you know, I've been reading a lot and seeing a lot about the Chiefs and how well they perform in November and December. And this hasn't really been the you know, they usually, the gas pedal goes down and they just zoom into the playoffs. And it just feels like they're kind of chugging into the playoffs, right? They're kind of you know, they're kind of pedaling in, so to speak, on a bike, as opposed to coming in on a race car. But that's not to say, you know, when you look at some of the things the Chiefs are doing, Jeff, here's something that has me really excited. Right now, the Chiefs are out rushing their opponents. You know, they've run the ball, you know, almost 10 to 12 more runs so far, 351 runs for the Chiefs and 339 for their opponents. Would you ever have thought,
right,
you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, when the Chiefs were struggling with their own running game, that they'd be out rushing by another, and then from a yardage perspective, they're 200 yards ahead of their opponents, 1600 to 1400, and then they've got, you know, 4.8 yards per rush against the 4.3. So the Chiefs are out rushing their opponents, which I never would have thought. And I think that's a testament to two things we've talked about, or at least the first thing we talked about is what the Chiefs have done to solidify the defense against the running game. And I think they've done that. And then you look at what they're doing with Isaiah Pacheco and McKinnon, right, coming out of the backfield, Patrick doing it with his legs occasionally. I mean, they are that's what I'm most excited about. If you ask me what is the one thing – of course, everybody wants to talk about Patrick and Travis and, you know, his incredible season he's having yet again. And I really do like the way they've spread these receivers out. But I got to tell you what warms a lineman's heart is the fact that they are rushing the ball now, and they're running it with authority, and they're running it with like a purpose. Like they are purposely, their game plan is purposed around this running game. And I think that is going to really benefit them when they do play that complete game. And if the running game is still hitting on all cylinders, look out, because I think short of, you know, working on protecting the ball, it's the thing I'm most excited about for this team right now.
And I think for this game, Joe, I think that's really something to watch. I really expect, I think that line is actually pretty high. I'm surprised it was 10 points for a game that the Seahawks really need. I think the Chiefs win, but I think it's going to be under 10. But that running game that you mentioned, I expect that to be one of the differences in the game for the Chiefs. They're really running the ball well, as you mentioned, and the Seahawks have the 29th ranked defense, and they're particularly bad against the run, second to last in the league, 31st overall against a run. So I expect a lot of Pacheco, a lot of McKinnon. The other thing that's kind of will be a fun matchup is watch that defensive line. Fred Clark, I'm curious if he has a little bit of an edge going against his former team. Maybe you think so. They didn't want him, so that's why they traded him to the Chiefs. Also, Carlos Dunlap was on the Seahawks last year. I'm curious if those guys have a little extra edge on them. Joe, what are you most interested in seeing matchup wise against the Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean that's a great point, Jeff. And yeah, like no player wants to say again. Do I have Marty's, sort of mantras just emblazoned into my brain.
It's Seahawks week. That makes sense. You know,
it's Seahawks week.
The old school AFC West.
Yeah. It is. Seahawks was my first start at the Seahawks. That was my first NFL start in 1992.
That's a rough place, I imagine, as a road offensive lineman to be.
Yeah, it was loud. It was the old Kingdome, which, Randy Cross used to say it was like putting a spaghetti pot on your head and banging it with a metal spoon. That's how loud it was in there because it was so small. I mean, it only sat about 55,000 people, but it had a cement roof and the Seahawks fans at that time, the Seahawks were pretty good, so they had had good turnout, good people showing up. So I was I was really excited that day. And I'll tell you why I was really most excited to play the Seahawks. Whenever we would go play the Seahawks, we would always bolt out of the locker room once we got there. And because every Seahawks game, they always had little league games playing at the Kingdome prior to the Chiefs game, or not the Chiefs game, but any game that the Seahawks played. So they would always have local NFL or local little league teams playing. And I'm telling you, it used to make me realize why I was doing what I was doing, because, after my first year and you're going into your second year, you're getting used to being on the team and you're used to being part of a pro franchise and seeing those little kids staring up at those big lights above them and playing on that turf field with all their mismatched turf shoes, right? Cause they're all basically wearing sneakers, cause back then turf shoes weren't like the norm, so you had to, you had to have some, you had to know somebody to wear turf shoes as a kid. And I just remember seeing all those kids with their like Chuck Taylor, Converse on, or they'd have their Nikes on and they're all different color shoes, and seeing those little kids out there absorbing the Kingdome and absorbing being out on the Seahawks field it used to warm my heart. And anytime I hear the Seahawks, that's the first two things I think of. My first NFL start at going against, Cortez Kennedy, Michael Sinclair, some of those players, and then seeing those kids and sprinting out of the locker room to see those little kids play. And then of course we'd come stand on the sidelines and then they're looking at the players. They're like, oh my God, look at the size of these guys.
Yeah.
So it was such a thrill and a treat to do that. I absolutely used to love it. It was so much fun.
That is so cool, Joe. Two questions for you then. One, was the Kingdome the loudest venue you ever played in? And two, tell me more about this Seahawk week when, Marty was making sure everyone wouldn't get fumble. Were you supposed to, so all the running backs were holding the ball. Were you guys, like other players on the team, were you supposed to go up to Barry Word and Christian Okoye and kind of swat at them? And
yeah,
take me through that in the Kingdome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll start with that. Yeah. That was the goal. It was like guys, they would just, everybody would, it was kind of like, I don't know if any of our listeners or you, sometimes remember in sometimes in high school they would do where it was usually part of some part of a life's class where they would have babies in a class, or they would have like, they would carry around an egg and it would simulate that, it was you. I know my daughters did it. My daughters at one point in their school years, I guess it was through the health and phys ed program, they would have to take care of this baby that had all these sensors in it and it would cry and, you had to take care of it and it had to sleep a certain amount of hours. But like, I remember that people would walk around the school with these baby carriers, right? And that's basically what we were intending to do. People were carrying the footballs around like it was their baby. And then, players in the locker room or meeting rooms would swat at it, and on the field, it would be extra drills for, swatting
a guy. Did you ever swat it, or were you too nice a guy? Too nice a guy. Did you take?
No, of course you wanted to make your team better. You got to listen. If you get any time a lineman gets a chance for glory, and you get to be the guy in the locker room that knocked the ball out of Barry Word or Christian Okoye's arms, you were gonna go for it, because you were trying to make the team better. It was part of the fun, and I think it was it. Listen, it. Think about it though. Just think about it from a practicality perspective and how that's just getting into a running back's head, right? When you're walking around all day holding the ball, 4 points of pressure, not knowing when somebody's going to come up and swat or poke from behind and poke that ball out. You know, it's it gets to you, and it starts to create some muscle memory. Maybe, like I said earlier in the show, maybe Andy needs to pull that Marty Schottenheimer page out of the playbook and try that just to change it up, because you know we can't continue to have those. Was the Kingdom the loudest? Going back to that question, yeah, I mean, I'd have to say, you know, like, I don't know if this isn't the right term, but like pound for pound, yeah, it was probably the most acoustically challenging place and to play, especially as a lineman, you know, tackle, because the way that the noise reverberated off of the small cement roof. I mean, if you go back and look at pictures of the Kingdom, it wasn't really that big. I mean, it was almost like it was an indoor soccer stadium, right? It sat like 55,000, I think. And so it was really small and compact, and the roof was pretty tight. And it wasn't like the Astrodome or the Louisiana Superdome. I mean, those were cavernous. And it's just the way that the Kingdom was built, it really was loud. I mean, did it, you know, was Arrowhead louder? I mean, it had to have been just because it had no roof. And if you can create those kind of decibel levels at Arrowhead with no roof, yeah, I mean, pound for pound, it was probably the loudest because of the number of people that were in there and the fact that they had a roof. Yeah, it was quite challenging to play there. It was really hard. Plus, you know, I'm playing in an era where, you know, if we went shotgun, quarterbacks were still taking their like 7-step drops off of shotgun. Like Dave Craig was like, you know, defensive lineman basically had a straight shot to him. He set up so far back in the pocket. And that was a challenge because you couldn't even create that half of an oval, you know, around the quarterback. Dave was so far back, it was like a straight shot. And so it definitely created challenges for the tackles, you know, getting jump off the ball late because of the snap count, and then having, you know, a different kind of a drop back quarterback back then.
Great stuff. Great memories, Joe. So, yeah, and I got sidetracked. We got talking about all this old fun, old school stuff. Matchup to watch this game and your final score prediction.
Well, I would say, based on the conversation we had earlier, I would say, let's see how the line can do. Let's see how the line can do in this running game. Let's see if the line can open some holes. And that would be the first thing I would watch if I were a fan. Can the Chiefs dominate the line of scrimmage on the offensive side? And can they establish themselves as a team that can run the ball and use the running game to their, you know, to their benefit, so that it can open things up for Patrick in the passing game? I think that's what I would watch on the offensive side. On defensive side, just we have to keep our eyes on the secondary, right? What's the secondary going to do? And can they establish some confidence this week and make some big plays? Can the safeties come up, make some big plays? Can they establish themselves, be able to play man to man consistently, and, you know, not get beat, not make mistakes, or, you know, not leave, you know, receivers wide open? I think that would be what I would watch for on defenses. You know, look at those individual matchups of the receivers and see how our D-backs are doing against them. And my prediction, how about you, Jeb? Well, let me ask you, how about you from a matchup perspective? Then I'll flip back to my prediction and you can do your prediction.
Yeah, matchup perspective, other than obviously what I mentioned with the Frank Clark and Carlos Dunlap going against their former teams, I'm also, you mentioned the D-backs, I'm really excited to see, you know, because the Seahawks aren't a team that the Chiefs fans really get to see a lot, just being a different time zone, NFC West and all that. Tariq Woolen is a really interesting guy, leading the league in interceptions, rookie, really tall, really fast, used to be receiver. I'm curious to see him against the Chiefs receivers, but I like the Chiefs to win by about 5. I think 10 is really high. And right now the Chiefs are kind of playing everyone close to the vest. They're still winning the 7 division champs for the seventh consecutive year. But I'm going Chiefs by 5.
Okay. All right. I'm right there with you, Jeff. I think they're going to win by a touchdown. I don't think they're going to cover the spread. I don't think. Okay. 10's a lot, you know, and if they, unless, and it's going to be cold, right? I mean, we know that.
That might be, we didn't even talk about the matchups to watch. Is that
the weather
factor? Yeah.
Is the weather a distraction? Does it, you know, does it slip slip away some of the confidence of Harrison Butker in the kicking game? Does it force the Chiefs to maybe run the ball even more than they would already, even though we're out rushing their opponents right now? I think that's probably what's going to limit it to a 7-point game. Not that the weather should be a distraction, but we all know it is. Come on. Like I know football players want to be tough and macho and all that stuff, and they don't want to admit that the cold, it's cold. I mean, come on, it could be single digits. And that's tough. It's tough to get a hold of the ball. It's tough for special teamers to get out there, and having been on the sidelines, trying to hang around the warm bench and the heaters, and then get out there in the cold. For the all day players, the offensive line, defensive line, they're going to be fine, because you get warm when you're playing. But for the guys who don't play all 60, 70 plays of their respective side of the ball, it's a distraction. I don't think anybody, they'd be lying if they told you it wasn't.
Joe, last couple minutes here. Coldest game you ever played in?
I'd have to say it probably was a toss-up between the AFC Championship game, which I'm trying to remember how cold that really was.
Buffalo.
But the coldest that I – yeah, the AFC Championship game in 93 against Buffalo. But I'd have to say the Indy game – that we lost in the playoffs, the divisional playoff game, where, in 93, in 90, in 96 or 95, when we had home field throughout, like that may have been the one.
Well, stay warm out there, everyone, and happy holidays. If you enjoy this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.